Well, good morning. That's a great song, wasn't it? Our God is alive, so are we. And that's a great thought to consider. Glad to have you with us this morning. I love getting together in mornings and doing studies and looking at things. It just kind of sets the rest of your day just right. You're putting the Lord right at the front of your day, and it helps us to get things in order as they need to be, and it's very mindful for us as we look at some things together. I didn't talk about these little note cards last night. I kind of forgot about them. I'm so used to doing these at home, I don't never talk about them. But I learned a long time ago, you remember so much of what you hear. And you remember more what you hear and you see. That's why we're going to have the PowerPoint. You remember more what you hear, you see, and you write. That's what these are for. You remember the most what you hear, you see, you write, and then you tell someone else. Now, I can't do part four for you, but we're going to try to do these first three parts with you as we look at these things together. So you've got both of them. Today we're going to talk in this first lesson about taking care of the needy and look at some things as we think about the church, as we emphasized last night. Now we're going to kind of go into some different levels of this and look at how God has designed the church to take care of each other and our responsibilities with that. You know, through the entertainment world, there's been a lot of phrases that's just gone beyond the movies and the commercials that we just use in life. I think about the Apollo 13 movie and that little phrase, "Houston, we have a problem." I've used that phrase quite a bit. When my kids went away to college, one of the last things I'd always tell them is, "E.T., call home." You know, call home once in a while. And there's phrases like that that come out of the entertainment world that just kind of fit in life. Well, recently, AT&T had this commercial. And this guy's in a tattoo shop, and he's getting his first tattoo, and he's very, very nervous. And the tattoo guy, the tattoo artist, says, "It will be okay." And he said, "Just okay." And then he puts the needle on his arm and gets ready to start making the tattoo, and the guy says, "Aren't you supposed to draw it first?" And then he has this great statement, "Stay in your lane, bro." And I've used that a lot. And that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today as we think about the idea of how the church is supposed to help to remind ourselves to stay in the lane. Now, we think about that concept of staying in the lane, it brings to us the idea that different things are responsible, but there are certain things that we need to keep in the right type of order. I use this phrase a lot when I'm driving down the highway. Stay in your lane, bro. You're about to get in front of me. And that's a concept we need to see, and we appreciate about that. So as we talk about God's church, God's work, doing it God's way, we remind ourselves what the purpose or the mission of the church is. And really, it's fourfold. Begin with is to worship God. We are the saved. We gather together to honor the God who saved us. We honor the God who is alive. And that's part of what we are. And to worship God and to honor God, we have to do it the way God wants to be honored. Okay, now, mentioned a little bit last night, I golf. Now, for my wife's birthday, she never golfs. She knows nothing about golf. But if I were to buy her a really very expensive driver for her birthday, that would not honor her. She would use it probably on my head, but she wouldn't. That would not mean anything to her. So when we think about worshiping God, it cannot be how I want to be worshipped or how I want it to be. It has to be how he wants it. It goes to him. The other aspect of the work of the church is to make disciples. Go into all the world and make disciples. In our second part here, we're going to talk about evangelism. A lot of folks are interested in baptizing people, but not making disciples. Then from that, the disciples were to be trained. How to serve one another, how they're to function within this kingdom of God, and then fourthly, how they're to take care of each other. That's really what the church is about. That's our focus, and that's our intent, and those are some things that we need to kind of look at. So this morning, what we want to focus upon is this idea of how we take care of the church. And this is a lesson I think a lot of us grew up hearing a long time ago. We haven't talked about these lessons in a while. And we've got some younger folks. Everybody needs to know this because you're part of the church. And you need to know how it's supposed to operate. You young men, who knows 25 years from now, your name may be put up to be a shepherd of a congregation somewhere. And you need to know how the church is supposed to operate. All of us should know that. And so when we look at this lesson, it's something that really appeals to all of us. Now, one of the things we notice as we just kind of walk through Old Testament real quickly is that God has always been concerned about people who were needy or people who could not take care of themselves. Back here in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, it talked about when they harvest the fields, they were to leave the corners for the poor people and for the stranger. This was God's way of taking care of those who could not have what they have. A similar thought is also found in the book of Deuteronomy, where it says, when you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten the sheaf in the field, do not go back and get it, for it shall be for the alien, for the orphan, for the widows. In other words, you get your harvest, but if you've left some stuff behind, leave it. That's God's way of taking care of them. God was concerned about them. God didn't say, well, it's their problem and they're going to figure it out. God was making provisions in the law to help those people. In the book of Proverbs, we find, you know, interesting statements such as Proverbs 19. He who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deed. Again in Proverbs, he who shuts his ear to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be answered. And then he who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses. God's again laying a responsibility. We have a responsibility to help those we can help. And so all of this illustrates for us that God understood that he had a care for all people. Now, we flip to the New Testament, and we think about these Matthew passages once again, where Jesus told the disciples how to pray. Give us this day our daily bread. God is the one who provides. So God is interested in these things. It's really easy for us to assume all God cares about is the spiritual. All God cares about is our soul. He doesn't care about our body. That's not true. And so that reminds us of this. And again, in Matthew chapter 5, as God sends the rain upon the righteous and the unrighteous, it's God's way of showing how he cares for all people. It is interesting, and we won't take the time to read this, but of all the miracles in the New Testament, all the miracles of Jesus, aside from the death and resurrection, which is in all four Gospels, there's only one miracle that's in all four Gospels aside from the death and resurrection stuff, and that's the feeding of 5,000. And that's interesting to me, because if you put all the miracles on the table and say, pick out one that you want to be in all four Gospels, man, I'd put walking on water, I'd pick raising Lazarus, but this is the one. And again, it illustrates for us that God was concerned about the multitudes. It was late in the evening, the disciples were going to send them home, and Jesus said, let's find out, you know, let's take care of them. And that was a test for them to see that. And so our thought this morning as we consider this is, what does God expect the church to do? And let me read you this little statement from Philip Yancey in his book on prayer. And he says, while I was writing this book, I've made trips to several different countries. I visited a church in South Africa, 35,000 members strong, which runs an outreach program, including prison ministry, a hospital, a rehab farm for addicts. A few months later, I was in Wisconsin, attended a conference on the ministry to women and prostitution that attracted representatives from 30 different nations. They worked to counter illegal sex trafficking and also to liberate women from prostitution. From there, I went to a Salvation Army conference where I heard stories about helping the downtrodden. Then to Roanoke, Virginia, where I visited a sprawling complex that began as a rescue mission and through the help of 60 churches grew into a shelter, education center, and clinic. That kind of thought is common in a religious community today. And oftentimes, particularly around Christmas time, folks will say, well, what's your church doing to help the community? What are you doing to help these needy people out here? And sometimes we don't know the answer. And sometimes we may be ashamed. But we need to remember the expression, stay in your lane, bro. God has something to say about this. And so what we're going to look at is who gets helped and who does the helping. So now let's consider some things. We begin, first of all, with some principles we have to understand. To further this lesson, we have to understand these principles. There is a difference between the individual Christian and the church. And the Bible brings this out a couple ways. Here in Matthew chapter 18, he says, now if your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault in private. If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. If he does not listen to you, take one or two more with you so that by the mouth or the testimony of two or three witnesses, every matter may be confirmed. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. If he refuses to listen even to the church, he is to be to you a Gentile and a tax gatherer. Notice there's a difference between you and two and three. When I go, I'm not two or three. I'm the one person. But notice the two or three is not the same as the church. And so when we think about who's to help, we think about this concept, we need to see what the Bible teaches. And to understand, there's a difference between the individual Christian, two or three Christians, and this concept we call the church. Another passage, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 34. If anyone is hungry, let him eat at home so that you do not come together for judgment. As to the remaining matters, I will give instructions when I come. Once again, there's a difference between our homes and our assemblies. They're not the same thing. Once again, we look at another passage, Acts chapter 5, verse 4. While it remained and sold, did not remain your own. After it was sold, was it not under your control? Why is it you conceived this deed in your heart? You've not lied to men, but to God. Once again, there's a difference between my money and what we may say the collected money that we gather on Sunday. Now, these principles are important to understand as we think about, we go through these scriptures, and who is it that's supposed to be helped? And who is the driving force behind these things? And again, very common in our religious community to think, well, what one does, we all do. What we all do, one does. And we need to understand these principles. So we turn to the book of Acts. And from the very start, we notice that the church took care of her own needs. We look, for instance, in Acts chapter 2, right after we read about the 3,000 being baptized. And all the believers were together and had all things in common. And they would sell their property and possessions and share them with all to that extent that anyone had need. Here we find the brethren taking care of each other. This is the concept God wants us to see. That thought carries over in the fourth chapter. For there in chapter 4 it says, for there was not a needy person among them. For all who were owners of land or houses would sell them and bring the proceeds to the sales and lay them at the apostles' feet, and they would distribute to each to the extent that any had need. Then goes on to talk about Barnabas, how he sold a tract of land and gave the money at the apostles' feet. This is the means in which the brethren were being taken care of. This is how God does this. Now, sometimes the need was greater than what a congregation could take care of. So now let's turn over and read this in our text. Now go to Acts chapter 11 with me. Acts chapter 11. Let's just kind of notice this in our text here. Acts chapter 11, and we begin verse 27. Acts 11, and we begin verse 27. It says, now at this time, some prophets came down from Jerusalem to Antioch. And one of them named Agabus stood up and began to indicate by the Spirit that there'd certainly be a great famine all over the world. And this took place in the reign of Claudius. And in the proportion that any of the disciples had means, each of them determined to send a contribution for the relief of the brethren living in Judea. This they did, sending it in charge of Barnabas and Saul to the elders. Now, some principles I want you to notice here. First of all, the need was something beyond their control. There was a famine. And the famine is going to affect your crops. It's going to affect your animals. It's going to affect the water supply. This is something beyond your control. You and I cannot control the weather. We're not like the Lord in the boat in a storm. We're going to say, stop the storm. We can't do that. And so this is beyond that. Now, this is important to understand. In our society today, I just heard this the other day on the radio, 80% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. A majority of Americans right now, if they had an $800 emergency, could not pay for it. They'd have to put it on their credit card or take a loan out. And what typically happens is while we're paying that emergency off, there comes another emergency. My air conditioner went out. I don't have the money, so I put it on my credit card or I take a loan out. I'm paying for that. And then the dog's sick. And then the kids need braces. And this happens. And the car needs tires. And we just get deeper and deeper and deeper in the debt. When we talk about what happened here in Jerusalem and Antioch, this is beyond their control. This is not me going to Best Buy and saying, I want the largest TVs, I want five of them. And then I want the biggest truck, And I want this. And then here comes my mortgage and I can't pay it. So I go to the elders and say, will you help me? I can't afford these things. Well, you mismanaged your money, you see. This was not a mismanagement of money. This was something beyond their control. Now, the Bible talks about having personal responsibility. The Thessalonians, he said, if you're not going to work, you're not going to eat. And by that principle, he's saying, don't expect the church to help you. You can work, go to work. Now, you may not like the job. I've had a lot of stinky jobs in life, okay? And sometimes those stinky jobs will remind you, I need to go to school and get an education, get a better job. But you have a personal responsibility. There's also in our Bibles the idea of a family responsibility. Here in Timothy, if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family. Now stop and think about this today. If all of us are living paycheck to paycheck to paycheck to paycheck, number one, whenever we're too old or too sick to work, we're going to be in trouble because we don't have any money saved up. And then when mama gets sick, we can't help mama because we're living paycheck to paycheck to paycheck. And so lessons about money is not a denominational thought. I have a whole bunch of lessons. I've done a lot of writing on this. There's a lot of my preacher friends who are great preachers, but they don't understand this concept. And so what we're seeing here in Acts 11 is something beyond their control. It was a famine. It was a hurricane. It was a tornado. It was something that destroyed things that was beyond. This was not going to Best Buy and buying 8 TV sets. This is not going on a European vacation that it could not afford. This is not buying the biggest truck. We got a Ford plant in Louisville. This is beyond my thinking. We got a couple of our members that work there. They're cranking out Ford trucks faster than they can make them. And the starting prices of these trucks are $100,000 for a truck. I don't get that. I don't understand that. And so many people are buying them because they can't make them fast enough. What we're talking about is something beyond their control. Secondly, the church at Antioch sent money to the church at Jerusalem to help the needy. This is important because what we have is a Gentile church sending money to a Jewish church. And again, to show the unity and the understanding of how important that was. And then thirdly, the money was for the brethren in need. And what's interesting, the money was sent to the Jerusalem church. The money was not sent to another church, Corinth, and then goes to Jerusalem. It went straight to where the need was. That's always the Bible pattern. The money goes to where the need is directly. Why does that matter? Why does anything in here matter? You know, if we can start skipping that, can't we start skipping everything? Pretty soon we're at Burger King. Have it your way. And what we do is start picking and choosing. Well, I like this, and I like this. It's like going to the buffet. I'll take some of this, but I don't want any of that, and I'll take some of this. And pretty soon, we pick and choose what we want to follow in our Bible. God has a pattern. We need to appreciate that pattern. Now, let's look at some more verses here. Interesting, this consistent pattern we find in the New Testament. Romans 15, verse 25 through 27, it says, "But now I am going to Jerusalem, serving the saints, for Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make a contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem." Now stop there for a minute. Wasn't there other poor people in Jerusalem who were not Christians? Yes. Well, what about them? No. He's talking about the money from the church. It goes for the saints. It just doesn't go to the community. Well, when you go back to Acts 11, that famine, didn't it hurt everybody in that area? Yes, it did. But the money went from the church to the brethren. That is the pattern we see in our New Testament. In the book of 2 Corinthians, chapter 8. "Now, brothers and sisters, we make known to you the grace of God which has been given to the churches of Macedonia, that in great ordeal of affliction and abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave voluntarily, begging with us much urging for the favor of the participation in the support of the saints." You see that? We're not just giving it to some food bank over here. We're not just giving it to some shelter over here. When it came from the church, it went to the saints. This is how God takes care of the church. This is the pattern we have to see. Book of 1 Corinthians, we read this a lot on Sunday mornings right before we have an offering. And notice what it says. Now concerning the collection for the saints. That's who it's directed to. So when we look at this idea of how does God work for helping the church, that's our obligation. That's something you and I need to do. And that's why we give. We give to help each other. We give to help other congregations when there are needs. A few years ago, there was a serious hurricane down south in the Houston area. Our congregation sent a bunch of money to that congregation because they had a lot of people that were hurt by that. That's what we see in this biblical pattern here. That's what we're trying to express about this. Now, the question comes up, what about those who are not Christians? A lot of people. There's more people who are not Christians than are Christians. What about all those people who are hurting and hungry? Well, God takes care of that too, but it's not through the church. We have passages like Luke chapter 10. Let's turn over there, if you will, Luke chapter 10. This, you remember, is at the tail end of the story of the Good Samaritan. And it begins with a young man coming to Jesus, asking what he must do to inherit eternal life. And as Jesus is going through these things, this man is trying to justify himself, the Bible says in verse 29. And so Jesus tells the story about a certain man, verse 30, goes down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He fell among the thieves. They stripped him. They beat him. They left him for dead. And a priest came by, went on the other side. A Levite came by, went on the other side. But a Samaritan. And that would just have a sour taste in those people's mouths. Put it in our culture today, a Russian. Who likes Russians? Who likes Samaritans? And yet he's the hero of the story. This man had compassion. This man had heart. And so the Samaritan, who was on his journey, came upon him. Verse 33, when he saw him, he felt compassion. That's the drive of helping one another. If you don't have compassion, I don't care. I don't care if it's raining on your head and you don't have a roof. I don't care if you're hungry and your kids are hungry. If I don't have compassion, nothing's going to get done. And so he had compassion. He came to him, bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. He put them on his beast and brought them to the inn and took care of them. Next day he took 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I return, I will repay you. Now which of these three, Jesus says in verse 36, do you think proved to be the neighbor to the one who fell among the robber's hands? And he said, the one who showed mercy toward him. And Jesus said, go and do. Notice he didn't say, go and preach this. He didn't say, go and memorize this. He didn't say, go and write this story down. Go and do what this guy did. What did he do? Well, this wasn't involving the temple. This wasn't involving the church. This was an individual who helped somebody else because he had a heart. Again, multiple passages. Matthew 25, I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. Who is the you here? It's not the church. It's you. It's me. It's individuals. Now, back to some things we said earlier. If you and I are living paycheck to paycheck, we can't help somebody, can we? We can't help our family. Family needs it. We can't help somebody out here who needs it. Maybe a co-worker, maybe a neighbor. We can't do anything because we can barely survive ourselves. James chapter 1, pure and undefiled religion, the sight of our God and fathers, to visit the orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. And the word visit doesn't mean go by and say, hey, how are you doing? Visit means take care of them. And within this context, you go all the way back up to like verse 24. He's talking about the individual here. He's not talking about the church, but you, but me as the individual. Once again, we look in Galatians 6. So then, while we have opportunity, you ever think about opportunity? Opportunity often happens not when you're ready. It's a Saturday and man, I've got to do this, going to take care of the yard, got to go to the store here, going to do that, all this stuff, and then somebody calls you up. Hey, can you come over and help? Oh, man, not today. It's my only day off, you know? Maybe next week. And you know what happens by next week? That door has closed. Opportunity comes, and sometimes it's not on your schedule. Sometimes it's not when it's convenient to you. But as you have opportunity, he says, let us do good to all people. All people. Are you a member of the Church of Christ? Oh, good, I can help you. Oh, you're not. You go to the Happy Now Church? Sorry, I can't help you. That's not what this says. You do good to all people, but especially those who are of the faith, the household of faith. Once again, the book of 1 Timothy instructs those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or set their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, and to be generous and ready to share. To be generous. That's what God has given us. So when we look at this simplistic lesson, how is it that God provides a way to take care of us? We need to remember to stay in the right lane. There's a lane for the church. There's a lane for us. And we need to stay right in there. I love the story of the CEO. He was really upset with his company because they just didn't seem to be motivated. So he went down on the plant floor one day, and he saw this young guy just leaning against the wall and had just fried his biscuits. He said, "How much do you make in a week?" The guy said, "I don't know. I guess $300. CEO took out his wallet, took out $1,200 in cash, gave it to him. Says, "Get out of here. I never want to see you again." Guy walked away. He turned to another employee. He says, "What was that guy's job?" He said, "He was a pizza delivery man." But you know, there's a lesson for us. We are God's hands. We are God's feet. We are God's eyes. And if we're not doing it, who is going to do it? And so we need to make sure that we're busy doing what we can, showing what compassion is, showing what Christianity is, and all these different avenues. And so those are some of the things that is important for us. I hope you see the value of this lesson. We live in a time where people just, where I'm at now, I probably get a phone call a week, at least one phone call a week. I'm kind of behind on my rent. Can you help me? We're not a bank. We're not in a loaning business. But the idea that the community has today is that if I'm down and out, I'll just call some church. I'll just go through the yellow pages and just call church after church after church after church, and maybe somebody will pay my water bill, my light bill, whatever it is, and I'll never go to that church. I have no religious affiliation, but I'm just going to call until somebody will take care of it for me. And what it is, in a lot of places, the church has lost its identity. We are to be a haven for heaven. Our main thing is getting people ready for heaven. We are a spiritual community. We cannot forget that. And when the world tries to push us to a different place, it loses that. And so we need to keep those thoughts before us.